No Child Left Behind was a noble goal for our public education system, but as the deadlines loomed and the requirements ratcheted up, it became clear it was impossible. So what now? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Call now with your ideas on what now for education reform in Alaska. Our statewide phone number, 1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage, 550-8422. Email talk at alaskapublic.org. The state waiver from the federal education law and the strings attached are the subject on Talk of Alaska statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. And by Providence Imaging Center, helping cancer patients stay in Anchorage with a PET scanner that fuses anatomical and functional images since 2004. Learn more at provimaging.com.
Complete a bachelor program without leaving home. Whether a first time or a transfer student, the University of Alaska Southeast has the degree for you. Visit ketch.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Well, school's pretty much out, but as you probably know, if you work at the school, school's not really out. And so there's a gathering today at which the state waiver system, what is going to be in the place of the federal No Child Left Behind requirements, is being kind of outlined for people. And the person that's doing that has agreed to join us on the program from downtown Anchorage, where they're actually making a presentation today, and help walk us through this. And we'll start in the process of discussing what the requirements are and how we can continue to work towards improving our education system, K through 12 in Alaska. But I want to turn to higher education to begin, because right now we are in what we call Foster Care Month. And with us, we have somebody who works at the University of Alaska, Anchorage, and is very much involved with the foster care issue and with helping foster kids make the transition into higher education. She's been on the show before. Welcome back, Amanda Mativier, the statewide coordinator of Facing Foster Care in Alaska.
Thanks for having me.
So I guess there's been a few provisions made to help encourage. It's basically kind of a dismal rate. Foster kids getting into college is not all that easy. Why don't you tell me why?
Well, there were a number of reforms actually that passed over the last several years. So the legislature allocated funding support for school-age children for transportation to remain in their school as they transition between foster homes, and that's made a big difference and will ideally increase the number of youth we have in grade school who are graduating on time and are on track to graduate. And then there was additional funding for college tuition and scholarships and job training, and now we have a number of foster youth who are or who are this last semester enrolled in higher education, who are in college.
And one of the things that happens this month, as I understand, is the laptop drive.
Yeah, so
now what? Give me what's the tie-in here?
So Facing Foster Care in Alaska, we often put out a pitch in partnership with Representative Guerra to try to get laptops, gently used laptops from the community, so we can match them with foster youth. So ideally, we want laptops that are not old and junky, something maybe no less than 3 years old that's still in good working condition. We have people that can wipe them out, but we match them with youth both in college and youth who are still in high school so that they can stay on track in school, do their homework, stay connected to friends. Nowadays, it's kind of hard to live life without, you know, access to technology.
Well, of course, you know those realities very well, but for many of us, I think we don't really examine it real closely, the situation that a foster kid is in. You might think, well, it's, you know, not the greatest situation in the world. But beyond that, the obligations of foster parents do not include a bunch of things that a lot of parents would normally provide for their children. And, well, like Christmas presents, for instance,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is one that's come up with the fat guy over mm-hmm. at the commercial station down the road. And, you know, that's been a really successful drive to get
Absolutely.
To match, you know, to just get to match up people that want to provide Christmas gifts for foster kids with the kids, you know, and they can make a great party out of the whole thing.
Yeah.
But this is more studies oriented. And as I understand, it's actually not just the laptops that are needed.
There's always a lot that's needed.
I mean,
needed.
You know, because you sit in that office, you know, and try and help these kids into that. So why don't we give you some idea of some of the things that our listeners out there might not think that a new college student is going to have to find the resources to get hold of on themselves, not provided by the college. Like bedding, for instance.
Yeah, one of the things that really struck me, I started this position with the university last year at the Child Welfare Academy, and so I started right before the fall semester started, and I was shocked that there were young people who were coming into college, who were moving into the dorms, who literally had nothing but clothing, the clothes on their back. They didn't have bedding, they didn't have towels, they didn't have food, you know. A lot of times when you move into your dorm, you might even have kind of junk food, like cup of noodles, things that you can microwave, basic hygiene stuff. I mean, we had young people who literally came in with nothing but the clothes they had on. And so it's really hard to be successful, even your first day at college, if you don't have an alarm clock to wake you up, if you don't have sheets or blankets to put on your bed. So it's really just some of the most basic need stuff that they need in order to be successful that the system doesn't provide them with.
So you've got an office in the Diplomacy Building over there. Do you have a stash of all this stuff in the closet there that you can hand out, or how's this work?
I collect a lot of items. I have a lot of stuff. Even just in the back of my car, I have a box filled with toothbrushes and deodorant, and I will run over care packages.
That's hilarious.
And it's a lot. It's stuff that we don't think about, right? Because our needs are met.
No, I totally don't think about it. Yeah.
And so here we have this young person who's oftentimes too embarrassed to even ask about these things, right? And so
yeah.
I just want to be able to be there to offer it up and say, hey, you know, do you need some granola bars? You know, how about
really
toothpaste, shampoo? Yeah.
So you're you got your master's in social work now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that tough?
I think initially, because I was in foster care.
As I recall, you felt you had a rather happy foster experience.
Yeah,
you were telling us about the last time
I had
the show.
Really supportive foster parents who continue to be supportive even into my adult life. And so, even initially starting college, I still lived in my foster home and. You know, there were days I didn't want to get out of bed and go to class. My foster mom would come in and flip the light on and be like, get up. You know, and so I always had that support of, you know, people there. And that helped me really to figure it out my first 2 years of college. And I think once I had that under my belt, I had all my general requirements done. I just felt like I was on the track to do what I wanted to do. I just wanted to help people, and social work really fit with what I wanted to do.
Well, congratulations. And is it rewarding work? You know, sitting in that office and helping those youngsters?
It is for me. I really enjoy working with foster youth, just obviously because of my own experience in care, but just to be that person to be able to help them and really have an understanding of what they're going through, I think that makes a big difference.
So is there anything like this at UAF or UAS?
I actually work with the students that are at those campuses as well. We have more students at the Anchorage campus as well as Mat-Su, and then we just have one or two in Southeast and three in Fairbanks. And so we want to expand. We want more students to come into college.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's just getting the word out and letting foster youth know that there is funding and support available to them.
So does Facing Foster Care have a website, and what's the, you know, give me the nuts and bolts here about, you know, if somebody's got that laptop sitting at home.
Facing Foster Care in Alaska does have, we do have a website, but it would be great for people to just email. They could email mm-hmm. facing_fostercare@yahoo.com, or they could give me a call at 907-230-8237.
We're free to post that on our website so
yeah.
that people can,
mm-hmm.
okay.
Well, we can coordinate with them to, they can either drop it off or we'll pick it up.
Okay. You go pick it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would that be you?
It would likely be me. Yeah.
That's great. In your carload of toothpaste. In there between the toothpaste and the pillows. Well, it's great to have you back. I'm glad you could make the time to come in.
Absolutely.
And be on the show. And I'm really happy to bring some awareness to this issue again while we're still in that month. We've got a couple days left.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I believe our other guest has called in. Let's see. Susan McCauley, are you with us?
I am.
How are you doing, Susan?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Boy, you normally work out of Juneau, but you're right now in Anchorage for this conference. You really hit a perfect day.
I did, no kidding. It's hard to be in a windowless room on a day like today.
I would think so, but, you know, there's work ahead. That's why you're here.
That's right.
And I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us on Talk of Alaska and help walk through the waiver of No Child Left Behind and what that actually means for the districts. Because I certainly remember when it was announced and the goals were announced, and I thought, well, this is going to be something if we can pull this off. And what we had, I think, was a system of incentives that just, well, the problem was, for one thing, it didn't really seem to always apply that well for Alaska. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I would, yes.
So I guess I should tell people you were the director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support at the State Education Department, which is now the Department of Education and Early Development, I believe, right?
That's correct.
And you've sort of been the point person to negotiate, because this waiver wasn't just a matter of Alaska saying, okay, give us a waiver, we need to do it our own way, and then all of a sudden the feds handed it over, right? The state has actually had to draft a whole program as best it can, mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wondering what that consists of. And I don't think that's probably, you know, from your point of view, that there's no easy, simple answer to that. But let's take, for instance, the issue of schools that would have been called failing schools under the ratcheting up of their requirements this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the previous, I guess, metric, what most people know as adequate yearly progress. So, you know, folks certainly have heard teachers and probably even students, certainly parents, talk about whether or not their schools have met AYP, adequate yearly progress. That is the metric put in place through No Child Left Behind. And what that did was establish a system across the country by which all schools were expected to have 100% of their students proficient by 2014. And as schools did not meet that target, there were increasingly, non-palatable sanctions for schools, not the least of which were labels of them as failing schools. And so what the waiver permits the state to do is a waiver from that adequate yearly progress. It does place on us certain requirements, but it allows us to put in place a new accountability system that has been designed in Alaska for Alaska, rather than adopting one that is static and applied equally to all states.
And how is the process going to go to actually say what the benchmarks are going to be? AYP was sort of said it was going to be, you know, its test scores basically is based on. So this new accountability, is there going to be like a public comment process so the public can kind of weigh in on some of these ideas? I mean, you know how it is out with those districts, because you've actually worked at some of those.
Yep.
It's not as easy as it looks from Juneau or Anchorage.
Yeah, that's certainly true. The regulations for the new accountability system are actually out for public comment right now. They will be considered by the State Board of Education at its meeting in Saldatna next week. But there are a couple things that are significantly different from the adequate yearly progress measure. One is that this allows us to consider student growth. So adequate yearly progress was that all students had to hit a benchmark. They had to hit a certain score in order to be considered proficient. The new metric keeps in place percent proficient, but it also allows 40% of the metric is for growth of students, so that we are looking at how much they grew from the test assessments the previous year. And that is, again, significantly different. It really allows us to take into account where students are and whether they are attaining adequate growth rather than whether or not they're jumping high and hitting a bar. But there are a couple of other things that are significantly different. Emphasis on assessment results is still part of the metric, but we also now look at attendance rate of kids at a school. So 25%, for example, of the for elementary schools of the metric will be based on whether or not kids are coming to school. For high schools, we still look at graduation rate. But for high schools, we now also consider scores on Work Keys assessment, which is a career readiness assessment, or the ACT or the SAT. So it isn't just test scores anymore. And when we're looking at test scores, it isn't just how high did they jump, it's how much did they grow, and are students getting adequate growth?
Wow, that was very succinct, and you just went over about 19 different things that we could open up to talk about. Congratulations, very clear presentation, Susan McCauley of the State Education Department. And how can people get a look at this? How it's all written out? There's a website or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you just Google Alaska Department of Education, it'll come up right away, a link to the State Board of Education, and the accountability regulations are accessible there. I believe as well that right on the front page of the website is the announcement that our waiver from the U.S. Department of Education was approved last Monday, and so there's an easy way into that, and likely, I believe, an easy way into those regs through that.
Okay, great. And so for our listeners, if you'd like to join our conversation, I'm sure you have some things to talk over with Susan McCauley or with Amanda Mativier, who is also with us here. Amanda, say hi.
Hi.
If you want to talk with either one of those, the number statewide is 1-800-478-8255, 478-TALK. A local call from Anchorage at 550-8422, or you can zip an email, which I will see here on the screen, at talk@alaskapublic.org. And, I would point out that ever since Talk of Alaska started out, we've returned to this issue of education from time to time, and education reform and higher education. And I think we all realize that we're in a time of change, and things are going to be changing, and it's really a matter of our own engagement, whether we'll have much control over that change. Because wouldn't you say, Susan, that what the things, if there were failing schools under the federal law, there were essentially alternatives that the state had to find ways of sending kids to other schools and things that didn't seem real practical in villages, right?
Absolutely. So that was one of the consequences, which was a school choice consequence. And really, the intent there was good intent, and that was to give students and their parents options for other schools where student achievement was higher. But as you stated, in a place like rural Alaska, frequently, in fact, most of the time, there is one local public school, and the nearest possible public school is not that near. Even if it's 12 miles away, it's 12 miles away across the tundra by snow machine. So those sorts of options that might have worked pretty well, arguably at least, in cities, places where there were lots of options, just look very different than Alaska.
Well, are we going to maybe start working on some distance education options? You know, we already have kind of a correspondence system.
Mm-hmm. We are actually, in fact, ironically, the governor's budget included $1.1 million for Alaska Learning Network, and that is a distance delivery model or method for students to make sure that kids in rural Alaska have options for classes that contribute toward the Alaska Performance Scholarship. So we certainly recognize that, you know, there are issues that are unique to Alaska. They're not unique within Alaska, and we need to come up with some creative solutions. So the Alaska Learning Network is one way that we're trying to do that so that the kids in rural Alaska have equitable access to courses that hopefully will make them eligible for scholarships.
Okay, now this is probably way too hypothetical for you, but let's take a situation where there's some concerned parents in Alaska, and I've certainly run across many parents who have concerns about the educational system, and they like the beliefs of Rudolf Steiner and the Montessori system and on like that, and they like that sort of integrated learning system. And that's not going to be there in the school up in the hill in the village. The teachers don't know how to teach that way. And so what they would really like is access to the charter school that in Anchorage or Mat-Su or wherever it is, that it actually follows that, you know, whatever that persuasion is. But I don't see how these charter schools could possibly have the resources to participate, you know, meaningfully in a distance education system, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, thus far, I haven't seen an example like the one you provided happening yet. We certainly have statewide correspondence programs that are enrolling students from all over the state, and schools in Alaska are permitted to do that. But those are mostly what would be termed homeschooling programs, where they're using materials supervised by a certified teacher, but materials that help them or assist them in homeschooling their child through a public system. But what you're talking about, I haven't yet seen, and that's where there is other than a distance delivery homeschooling program that is, in fact, a public school, when we're talking about unique mission charter schools and the enrolling of kids from outside the geographic area, I haven't seen that yet, not in a way that provides direct daily instruction in a more traditional sense.
Okay, so the way you outlined it, it seems that there's still an accountability system, but there's wiggle room and other criteria that have been inserted. One would be simple attendance, and another one caught me was the career readiness metric. In other words, that along with graduation rate, there is some kind of progress towards, I don't know, vocation careers of some sort. Maybe you could go into that a bit.
Yeah, so the component of for high schools, the component of the new index includes consideration of ACT or SAT scores, which are an indicator of college readiness, or a state assessment called Work Keys. And Work Keys is an assessment that attempts to consider if a student has the skills that are likely to make them successful in the workplace. Are they able to analyze? Are they, I'm trying to think how I would describe it. It isn't so much content knowledge around academic standards. It's more capacities that are likely to contribute to their success in the workplace.
So I remember when I moved to the big city of New York and I was reading through the one ads looking for a job. And there were all these young men, you know, this is the early 60s, or young men willing to rise and things like that. And they were bait, you know, for the employment agencies to stick you in some back office of a bank or, you know. But and then the janitorial, that was pretty obvious. But then there were these other ones, and they had a criterion, good with numbers. And we know they meant that, you know, they weren't just looking for a work ethic, but they wanted you, if you were going to run a cash register, you need to know how to count the change backwards. It's amazing how many people don't have that basic skill. And today, of course, the computer does it for you, and you don't need to count your change backwards anymore. But there are still things that you You need to have some idea of numbers or you're really not employable at that concern. So this is fascinating to me. So how is this testing administered?
It's a computerized assessment. It's been in place, for a while. I should know the date, and I don't. It hasn't, however, been, it's a mandated assessment in Alaska, but it hasn't been considered as part of the accountability system because, as we talked about, the previous system was very formulaic and universal across the country. So, I guess this kind of gets back to just the tenet here, and that is that the waiver permits Alaska to identify what Alaskans consider as important by way of measuring student achievement and the things that students are supposed to know and be able to do when they graduate from high school, and allows us to structure an accountability system around those things. Certainly, percent of students proficient is still important, but it's not all that's important, and this allows us to put in place a metric that we think will be a more accurate reflection of how schools in Alaska are doing. It will certainly point out areas where we need to improve, and our work then will be to improve in those areas.
So who's going to be the one that cracks the whip, Susan? Is that the state board? Is that you? Is it the local board over the administrators? How's that going to work?
Well, I'm not sure I would characterize it as cracking the whip, but
I'm a talk radio guy.
But the way that the new system works is that for all schools in Alaska, will, based on their score on the Alaska School Performance Index, all those things we just talked about, they will end up with a star rating. One of the major complaints of the Adequate Yearly Progress model was that it was very confusing for parents, you know, the level two schools, the level three schools. It's really hard for them to, and not just parents, frankly, to really understand what that meant. So the Alaska School Performance Index will give each school a star rating of 1 to 5 stars, with 1 being lowest performing schools according to the index.
But
and
they
5
still get a star.
Yes, and 5 with the highest performing schools. What it does then is of the 1 and 2 star schools in Alaska are identified as focus and priority schools, the other way around, priority being those that need the highest priority for assistance, and focus being the next highest priority. The Department of Education then is accountable to provide support to these schools and the districts in which these schools are located. But that support, again, is not prescriptive. It isn't that we must, for example, replace the principal, as was increasingly a condition of the previous system, or replace half of the staff, or redesign the school day. They're not one-size-fits-all prescriptive intervention, so to speak. We have a lot of autonomy with regard to how we provide support to schools. It may be that we send them a coach to work on site on a regular basis helping them. It may be that we help them identify the need for a core reading program and that we work with them to get that in place. It may be that they have priority attendance at statewide professional development events like the one I'm at today. So we'll work with the districts and the schools to identify that. It's much less a stick than the tenor of the previous system, and much more our working collectively with them to support them.
Well, I think there's a number of school districts that feel that they don't really have enough resources to deal with learning disabilities, don't you? I mean, you must hear this.
Sure. I mean, and resources in general is certainly always, a topic. It's been a topic today. Here, I'm with about 75 principals and district office administrators talking about our new English language arts and math standards, and resources are always a concern.
Yeah. Well, we're speaking with Susan McCauley of the State Education Department. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255. And 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage of 550-8422, email talk at alaskapublic.org. Also with us and very quiet and well-behaved is Amanda Mativier of Facing Foster Care in Alaska. Amanda, I was kind of curious about your reaction there of the direction that they're going with a little more flexibility for the you know, how that sounds to you from your point of view.
Well, just in general, I'm thinking about youth in foster care. I think that you have to be flexible in order to meet their needs as they are, you know, possibly transitioning between schools as they're transitioning between placements. I think it gives more opportunity for teachers and staff to meet their needs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have a couple of calls here already, Susan. So if you can if you can hang with us, I know you have to get back to make your presentation, but I guess it's not just you, right? You got a staff there?
I do.
That's great. So I think we'll take our break at this point and then come back as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
The state of Alaska has been granted a waiver from the federal No Child Left Behind federal education reform requirements, which were ratcheting up to the point where we were going to have a whole lot of failing schools. So now we have some wiggle room, and we're exploring what kind of wiggles we got with Susan McCauley, director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support at the State Education Department. Fascinating, a lot of detail, but there's theory behind all this. And I think probably some of our listeners will want to go beyond just the nuts and bolts. Also with us is Amanda Mativier of Facing Foster Care in Alaska, who is now working at the university and helping foster kids transition themselves into higher education. And our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255 statewide. And from Petersburg, Douglas joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Douglas.
Hi.
Hi.
So, just my question. So, disabilities have been kind of addressed, but how will the metric deal with how a district will deal with disabilities? In my particular case, I have a very mild case of nystagmus, but that does, even mild cases of a visual impairment will cause problems. Will the metric track any of will the new metric take how a district handles a disability or even tries to figure out what's going wrong?
Susan?
Sure. Well, this actually does get to one of the things that I talked about earlier, but in a way that is, I think will provide a good example. So I talked about that the new metric is not just based on this static percent proficient, meaning that all children, irrespective of, for example, having a learning disability, must meet, you know, this bar of passing, so to speak, the state assessment. It also allows us to look at growth. And students with disabilities is one of the groups of students, specifically in our new metric, for whom we are accountable in a growth way, meaning we want to make sure that students are growing adequately every year in a way that reflects that they've been in school a year, that they should have a year's worth of growth, but at the same time doesn't expect them to reach this static benchmark. So there are four subgroups, and so this is the vernacular in the metric, for which we're specifically held accountable in that way for student growth, and students with disabilities is one of those subgroups.
Okay, so
what about the assessment angle?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, Mr.
Well, I think he's saying, "What? How do you?" Douglas is saying, "Well, what do you, in order to measure progress, you have to have some place to start, so you have to have an assessment."
That's right. So it is. We are still using a state assessment, but what we'll look at isn't just again, did they pass the test? It will be where were they last year. Where are they this year, and was there adequate growth during that year? And schools are held accountable for that. The prior system was not a growth system. It was basically, to put it simply, did the student pass the test? Oh, they didn't pass the test this year. Did they pass the test next year? It didn't. There was no recognition in that previous system through adequate yearly progress for did the student grow in his or her learning.
Douglas?
I suppose that pretty much covers it.
Okay.
I'm not planning to have kids of my own at any point, but, you know, I figure it was worth mentioning for the parents that were either aware or possibly weren't even aware of a disability that might be getting in the way.
Very good, Douglas.
That was my case.
Yep. Yeah, I and many others. Thanks, Douglas.
Uh-huh. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks for your call. We're talking about education reform. No Child Left Behind, accountability, foster kids, and getting them meaningfully integrated into the education system, the higher education system as well. 1-800-478-8255. And next up is Jenny joining from Washington. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Jenny.
Good morning. I'm a former Alaska teacher, and I just want to express my concern about the adoption of the Work Keys exam. I feel like our legislature is putting a lot of power into the hands of the College Board and the Educational Testing Services. To be a certified teacher in Alaska, you have to pass Praxis exams, which are practices owned by ETS. To get into college, you have to pass SAT or ACT tests, which are both open, both owned by these companies. And then Work Keys is also owned by ETS, and when it was adopted when I was teaching, the stance was that that test could be in the future used to determine eligibility for state employment. So I have some concerns about the power that Alaska and other states are putting in the hands of these two companies. And then that's all I have to say, and I'll listen to the response.
Well, okay, yeah, Jenny, you got a great response from me. I could talk about that forever, but I'm going to let Susan pick that up. I mean, we all know that these institutions come hopping in there when they see possibility for a profit center.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're good points, and you know, I guess one response would be that what I've personally and certainly professionally liked about the opportunity for a waiver is that we have had much more authority in how we're going about that than our current system. You know, you mentioned, Jenny, the ACT, SAT, and Work Keys. I'm looking at, you know, the metric I have here in front of me for the index. That will constitute 8%, you know, out of 100%, that will constitute 8% of the overall metric for a high school. So while it does bring it some attention and does give it some consideration, it isn't an overwhelming percentage in the overall index. And I guess what it, you know, if we put aside some of the concerns about power and profit and look at the intent is that we're trying to effectively have kids ready for what comes after us and not look at our responsibility as strictly getting children through a high school education with a diploma. That certainly is very important, but we also want to make sure that kids are truly ready for what comes next, whether that's college or a career. And so those sorts of assessments, the intent there is that we are doing something within the K-12 system to discern whether or not kids are effectively prepared for what comes after us.
And I guess from the way that you're explaining it, because you could do it either from column A or column B or some from each, that essentially school administrators then can kind of develop a menu. They can know, ideally, areas where they they know they could get that growth and then just concentrate on that.
Right.
Yeah. 1-800-478-8255, and that's the statewide number. Local call in Anchorage, 550-8422. Email, don't forget, is talk@alaskapublic.org. And Bob joins the program from Soldotna. He's been very patient. Bob, welcome back to Talk of Alaska.
Yes, good morning, Steve.
Hi.
And before I get into the education part, I'd just like to warn people coming down the peninsula this summer that we had a brown bear attack a Subaru, tore the mirror off, and pushed it into a ditch. So
I'm so glad you brought that up. Yeah, that's pretty vivid.
You're fishing, drive an American car. Anyway, I grew up in the interior and attended Alaskan schools from day one. And I still remember, I think I was in the fifth or sixth grade in the early 70s when they first started SAT testing. And we ranked, Alaska ranked in the top five of the whole nation in those testing scores, not just from my district, but I guess the statewide. But now we're like nearly next to the bottom. And I'm trying to figure out, and I think a lot of people are trying to figure out what happened there. I've got some different responses from some of the different politicians, I believe that vocational education is very important. You know, I when my folks retired, I spent my high school years in Idaho, and they just opened up a vocational center there in a little town of Nampa that I lived in. I was signed up to go to a vocational school in Fairbanks in my sophomore year, and I was going to take private pilots ground school and airframe one. So my folks hadn't retired. I would have became a pilot and probably an aircraft mechanic. But they opened up a vocational center down in the school I went to in Napa, Idaho, and they offered welding, auto mechanics, auto body, and electronics. And so I chose auto body, and I had a very good teacher. He worked with me, and in my senior year, I competed in, I don't know if VICA is still around, Vocational Clubs of America is still around, but I got a gold medal in the state of Idaho and got to compete in a national competition. But, when I moved to Idaho in my sophomore year, it seemed like I had already learned everything that I was being taught. Alaska was way ahead, and I was kind of bored with the scholastic part of it. But the vocational part really brought me through and gave me a career that I worked for many, many years. I ended up graduating with a 3.9 GPA. But, you know, I don't know where the state of Alaska is and high school vocational education is now. And one other thing, during this last legislative session, there was a bill brought forth to give vouchers to private schools, mm-hmm. which I believe would take money away from public schools. And I guess that's going to come up in the next session. But
basically, when you talk about that, Bob, that's it's unconstitutional. They have to amend the Constitution to do that.
So that's just rhetoric
at this point. Until the legislature turns it into something the people would have to vote on in order to amend the Constitution, they can't do
that's
it. So I don't want to really talk about that because it's unconstitutional.
Oh, no. But I'm just wondering what happened. We were way up there. You know, we have a greater population than we did when I was a kid. But, I think that's one of the responses I got from somebody I brought this up with. And he said, well, there's more people up here now. Well, okay.
I think Susan will have some insights on this because she's taught in rural schools before she came to this position at the State Education Department. Bob is saying it's his perception, Susan, that Alaska schools used to be better than they are. And they were getting better results, and he points to SATs. I don't know if this is true or not, but he's wondering what happened.
Well, you know, it's I guess I have a couple of thoughts there. Difficult to compare how kids were doing prior to No Child Left Behind with how they're doing after that. I mean, that No Child Left Behind ushered in a metric very, very different than what had come before. And so it's I guess, difficult to compare prior to and after that. You know, it also gets to, though, part of what we've talked about with a metric that fits Alaska, that recognizes some of the unique circumstances in rural Alaska in particular, certainly still has high goals for students, certainly holds us accountable as educators, but hopefully in a way that more accurately evidences how kids are doing. And, you know, I really, the comments about career and technical education, I think, couldn't have been more on point, and the value of that emphasis for lots of students. You know, the state of Alaska has really a top-notch statewide career and technical education plan that has been informed by labor and industry, by post-secondary, certainly by K-12, and, you know, the partners of the University of Alaska, the State Department of Education, and really is talking about career and technical education in a way that is for all students, not just students who are not going to go to college, but getting very intentional early on, ideally elementary, certainly by middle school, very intentional about helping children identify a career path and prepare for that. That career path may require college. The career path may not. We have lots of examples in Alaska of excellent high school level career and technical education programs where kids are earning certificates when they come out of 12th grade and they are ready to go into the workplace with those certificates. So, you know, certainly a lot of work to do, a lot going right, I think, a lot of work ahead of us, but the CTE piece, the career and technical ed piece in particular, very strong in Alaska, really getting a lot of attention and a lot of commitment around the state from folks who can make a difference there.
All right. Yeah. Amanda.
You know, I'm actually wondering, how does the high school qualifying exam tie into all of this?
Well, the high school qualifying exam is required still. It is either in statute or regulation. I should know which, but it's required. I believe it's in statute. So there has not been any official movement toward not having that assessment. You know, that high school qualifying exam is a basic skills assessment. It's, still required to be passed in order for a student to earn a diploma. That is not, that is separate from, statutorily, that is separate from these new metrics, the school performance index. You know, school performance index is required. Our coming up with that metric was required for us to get our waiver.
Gotcha.
The high school qualifying exam is a local, still required exam.
Right, good. Well, thanks for clearing that up. And now let me ask you this. What about highly qualified? Is that changed under the waiver?
It hasn't. Highly qualified status for teachers is still required.
All right. Good. Thanks. We'll get right back to you, Susan McCauley, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, publishing statewide news on Alaska's business sector, government, and industry since 1985. Information and subscriptions online at akbizmag.com.
Don't wait to make your home more energy smart. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's Home Energy Rebate Program will reimburse you for energy efficiency improvements. And if you don't have the upfront cash to make the investment, financing is available through Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Start saving money and energy today. Sign up at akrebate.com or call 877-257-3228. This message sponsored by AHFC.
We're speaking with Susan McCauley of the State Division, the director of the Division of Teaching and Learning Support of the State Education Department, really the point person in negotiating the state's waiver from No Child Left Behind measurement on school performance, introducing the growth model, making it attendance part of the criteria, a little bit of a vocational component. It's fascinating, all the different things that she's brought up. And one I wanted to throw in here, it comes from Jennifer. To what degree can the increasing kids' reading scores, to what degree can that play in this evaluation?
With the new accountability metric?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so it is still very much a part of that, both in terms of growth from year to year and in terms of our students performing at a level that would be expected at particular grade levels. So, you know, we have adopted new English language arts standards. Foundational reading skills is very much an emphasis of those standards. Assessments for that will begin in third grade, but interestingly, again, now out for public comment are new regulations that will take a look at how kids are doing in early literacy skills beginning at the end of kindergarten, not looking, of course, at whether or not they're reading, but whether or not they're letter names and sounds and whether they're beginning to decode in first grade. So, but with regard to the metric, how a child is doing in reading, beginning formally with assessment in third grade is still very much a part of consideration with expectations, both for grade level performance and then growth from year to year.
Okay, this question comes from Soren in Girdwood. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Soren.
Yeah, hi, Steve. I'm a teacher in the Anchorage School District. And while I'm glad the state's getting a waiver from NCLB, I think it's a failed system all around because, you know, teachers know that learning is way more complex than answering a bunch of multiple choice questions. And I am also concerned about the replacement with word keys. I think the problem with word keys is that at best it really does nothing to judge a child's ability to work in a given workplace. But at worst, it risks actually profiling students in advance of the job market because if you answer, you know, a couple of questions, say you want to be a beauty technician or something, and you answer a bunch of questions on some multiple choice test that really doesn't show your ability to do this incredibly, you know, a lot of jobs are real complex. And I've had students who've had dreams of working in a certain trade, and now they're shut out of that trade because they got a low work keys test.
They got profiled.
Yeah, they actually did.
That's a really good point, Soren.
You know, Steve, the real problem in education is, you know, and it's not teachers. Teachers are so recently, with this increasing move towards standardization, teachers are being blamed. But it's really, you know, the data shows that the most powerful influence on kids is their income background, their socioeconomic profile. And as kids come into the school, kids who come from poor families are less successful. So how's the state really going to address that? Or are we just perpetuating a system of inequality in our schools across Alaska where kids who, you know, don't come from privileged backgrounds but aren't tutored with private tutors after school, those kids are going to be less successful. And we continue a cycle in society where, you know, kids from a very young age are shut out of future jobs in college. Because they're raised in a single-parent home. How is the state going to address all that complex, you know?
I think there are definite limits. I think, Susan, you have to agree also. Thanks, Soren. You're starting to break up there. Susan, yeah, we went into this a little bit. You say the state will intervene and provide resources, but that's if they're available, isn't it?
Interestingly, I mean, the impact of poverty rate on student achievement is certainly well established. And so we talked a little bit ago about that, you know, through the new performance metrics, schools get a star rating, and that the 1 in 2 star schools are the schools that the state is required to provide the most support to. Interestingly, our waiver requires that the schools that we identify as priority and focus schools, that a minimum number of those are Title I schools. Title I schools are identified based on poverty. And so the metric actually does recognize the legitimacy of what Soren said, and that is that when there is a high rate of poverty in a school, in a community, among its students, that they do need additional support. And the requirements of our waiver require that we are intentional about providing support to schools that have those sorts of characteristics. Doesn't mean that we're not providing support to other schools as well. We have discretion to do that, but we are required to provide support to 1- and 2-star schools that have a high percentage of students living in poverty.
Thank you. Let's go to Brent, joins the program from Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Brent.
Thank goodness. Thank you so much. I'll be very brief. Brent Hughes here. 23 years ago in Anchorage, I discovered it created a one-hour method of teaching at times tables to young children. As we all, many know, we rank 27th in the world right now, and it's not our kids that rank, it's our adults that rank 27th, make that point. One-hour times table method, I've taught it across 4 states. I've been on TV in several times. It's been highlighted here locally on primetime evening news, but the Anchorage School District has steadfastly, determinedly refused to even look at my method. I'm a substitute teacher on occasion. There was a 12th grade girl that did not know the times table. What this means, of course, is that she knows no math beyond addition and subtraction. This is not a shame. This ought to be actionable. An actionable crime against the school district.
Well, Brent, is your tutorial service available for hire?
I have just posted the method on the internet.
Oh, it's for free.
TimesTableTricks.com.
What is it again? Missed it.
TimesTableTricks.com, and I have ample commentary.
Okay. Thanks, Brent.
Yep.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the brevity, too. Susan joins the program from Anchorage. Susan, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Just got a moment.
Thank you for taking my call. Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you very much, first of all, for posting this this conversation. I have a couple questions regarding...
You got time for one.
Okay. The student growth percentages that the State Board of Education wants to tie into teacher evaluations.
Right.
In less than 3 years, it goes from 20% to 50%. How does all this new information that the state is producing for student growth support?
Susan, you got 30 seconds on that one.
Yeah, so the growth portion that she's talking about will be based on the, for teachers for whom the data is relevant, will be based on the same assessments, student assessments, that are being used to for school achievement with the new index. So the link there is that the assessments used for the index and the assessment used for teacher evaluations are the same assessments.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks for your call, Susan. Susan McCauley, thanks for being with us on the program.
You're welcome.
Amanda Mativia, thank you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
All right. It's great. And thanks to Dave Waldron, Josh Edge, and I'm Steve Heim.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by Alaska Executive Search, providing temporary or full-time staffing for over 36 years, from executive and technical placement to medical and office staffing. Alaska Executive Search, online at akexec.com. The University of Alaska Southeast has web-based bachelor degree programs for first-time and transfer students. Learn online and work closely with advisors and experts in subjects like history, psychology, and anthropology. Cutting-edge technology prepares students for a variety of career paths, including graduate programs in teaching, counseling, and law. For more information, call Gail Klein at 228-4508. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Southeast. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.